Auto Line After Hours is brought to you by Bridgestone, passion for excellence. Chevrolet, the all-new Chevrolet Cruze. Get used to more. And by Dow Automotive Systems, innovations for clean powertrain solutions.
This is Auto Line After Hours with John McElroy, episode 91 for Thursday, February 17, 2011. Abandoned in Bandon. Watch Autoline After Hours live at autolinedetroit.tv every Thursday at 7 p.m. Eastern or 2400 hours GMT. You can subscribe to this podcast for free by searching for Autoline After Hours in the iTunes Store.
Hey, thanks for joining us, everybody. It's Thursday night, and it's me and the Auto Extremist, as always, here.
John, together again.
Together again. And joining us via Skype, doing this sort of Max Headroom thing on a screen here in the studio with us, is Art Spinella from CNW Research. Art, great having you back.
Hey, Art. We should familiarize our viewers with who Art is and what he does.
Well, Art is a guy who does market research primarily. Let me see if we can discern what he really does, and then we'll figure out if we're right or not. But he does a lot of market research in, of all places, a city called Bandon. It may as well be Abandon, but Bandon, Oregon.
At one time, that was actually what people called it. Yep.
And, yeah, you do all kinds of market research, publish your findings. I assume you do, like, special reports for clients and stuff like that, consulting, right? What else do you
do? Well, we don't do any consulting. We've never done anything specifically anybody.
Huh. So,
everything we do is totally independent, and if they don't like it, then
the hell with them.
Yeah, that's right. We do a lot of focus groups. We do a lot of surveying. We really aren't an automotive kind of research company. What we do basically is see how people spend the money they have, and within that context, we look at automotive.
And comes up with some very interesting insights by talking to people about how they want to spend their money, especially on cars.
Yep.
So what's the buzz of late, Art?
A little bit of we're seeing some interesting signs that consumers are willing to spend on items that are not necessarily necessities as much. Mm-hmm. And again, we're not looking at numbers that reflect 2006 or before. We're looking at the just basically improvements over where it's been for the last couple of years. And for the auto industry to really get to that point where it starts to sell 16 million, 17 million again, there isn't the foundation for that yet. And is probably from a spending standpoint, from a spending of disposable income standpoint, is probably a few years away before consumers get comfortable enough just getting back into what they consider to be luxuries, which are effectively new cars. Enhancements, that's a different thing. That's that middle ground where, you know, you make your life a little easier. So you get rid of an older car because you're a little worried about it, and you get a little newer car. That's coming back fairly well. But the consumer spending on necessities is starting to drop, which is really kind of critical. It's starting to shift into the other areas.
In other words, people are spending a little bit more on themselves.
Yeah, they're spending a little bit more. Their home-centric issues are starting to get better, or a little bit better. Again, you know, we're not looking at anything that resembles what it was 3, 4, 5 years ago. But we're certainly looking at a turnaround from where it's been for the last couple of years.
Cool. Good to hear.
That's good, yeah.
Yeah. Every little bit of good news is good news. So, hey, what do you guys make the news that broke this week of maybe GM hiring Bob Lutz back as a consultant?
Well, he's continued to be an advisor, but I think...
But this would make him a paid advisor then, or was he a paid advisor?
Well, I don't, you know, he must have had something. He's not going to just show up for free, but so now this must be enhanced. They moved Tom Stevens up and out. And, you know, I think Mark Royce is really their premier product guy, but he can't do it all the time.
Right.
So maybe
he's got to be president of North America.
And Mary Barra, who they brought in, is a manager to keep things going. So I think if they do it, you know, Bob hasn't lost a step, I don't think. So I think he will keep that momentum going that they can't afford to lose track of. So
I just wondered if it's a situation where it's like, here, Bob, we're going to pay you some money. Anytime Mary has a question, she can call you, right? And
well,
which wouldn't be a bad way.
You know,
to do it.
Mary's not a conceptual, visionary product person. She is a
manager.
By all accounts, a superb manager.
Right.
So they need the direction, and then she follows up.
Uh-huh.
But that direction is going to come from Mark Royce and Bob Lutz, I think.
Huh.
What do you think, Art?
Yeah, I think from a morale standpoint, every once in a while you throw in somebody that everybody has a good feeling about, and Bob is clearly it.
Yeah.
And it's nice to know that you still have that tie. It's kind of like it's kind of like any corporation, is Apple, you know, with Jobs. You know, there still has to be this link to somebody that has a vision.
Yeah.
And as long as you have that link to the vision, then everybody feels a little more comfortable internally, I think. I don't think the consumer cares one way or the other, but it certainly is a positive for just GM employees in general, I think.
Well, yeah, I think, well, the true believers in product development, they absolutely need to know that GM isn't losing their focus.
Right. And, it's good to have a leader in that regard, too, having the vision, because just having somebody who's managing a process does not produce scintillating product.
No.
You'll get competent product, but, you know, if you look at GM stuff up until, you know, Lutz really started to change things around, it was all done by a process that met all their goals. It hit fuel economy and safety standards and targets for cost and this. But the product had no soul. It had no excitement to it, and they paid for it in market share. And that's why I think, you know, this industry is all about product. That's what people buy. You want to find the best artists in the world, whether that is an artist who's a designer or an artist at program management.
Mm-hmm.
And just having somebody who can put a good team together and push them through a process, to me, is not going to produce scintillating product.
So, well, I've got a question for both of you. And I saw a piece somewhere, and I quite honestly don't remember where it was, about Cadillac looking at getting softer in its styling, and I don't know if that was accurate or not.
Art, I was responsible for that.
See, I knew you had something to do
and
with it.
Then,
it was a leading question.
And then the gnomes kidnapped me, and I was taken into the inner sanctum, and I was satisfied to know that I was given erroneous information, and it's not true.
Well, good.
That GM design, I can safely say, hasn't lost a step. The new wave of Cadillacs coming are very good, really good. So that was erroneous on my part, and I corrected it on the site the next week.
Yeah.
So, I'm satisfied that they're...
So what you're suggesting, Art, is it would have been a mistake to soften the thing up. Is,
oh, my gosh, yes.
In fact,
we were going to follow up with some focus groups on Cadillac because of that rumor. And after Peter backed off, we actually threw that idea right out the window.
Well, it's so difficult to establish a face. Remember when the Cadillac Evoque concept came out?
Oh, yeah.
And I mean, it was just like, wow.
Mm-hmm. It was stunner.
And they followed up. And all of a sudden, that Cadillac face coming at you down the road is instantly recognizable. And it's so hard to do. And when a company does it and it stays consistent with it, you know, it resonates with consumers. And I mean, you know that, Art. And John, of mm-hmm. course. And it's so hard to do. That's why, you know, people really criticize Lincoln, and I'm not so sure why, because they did basically the same thing in their own way. So now to the point when you see Lincolns coming down the road, you know it's a Lincoln.
True.
And you may not, I mean, you know, great design is sometimes polarizing. A lot of people don't like Cadillacs. You know, they think it's, wow, it's so aggressive. And I like it. I think it's American. I think it's American. It's got its own feel and everything about it. Now, Lincoln, people are saying the same thing they did when they had reservations about Cadillac. But I've seen some of the future Lincolns, and they just keep getting better. So,
They keep getting better, Ford will have, I think, no problem in resuscitating Lincoln. Yeah. It's just going to take time, and it's going to take a lot of money. I say 20 years and $1 billion a year. That's what it's going to take to turn Lincoln around. But it can be done, and it's got the heritage to do it.
Yeah, I mean, you know, BMW established their face. Mercedes established their face, although they've managed to kind of screw it up now and again.
Well, then here's a question for both you guys. Can Smart get turned around? I mean, you know, I think if you had it in your newsletter, right? You know, if Penske can't do it, no one can.
I said the same thing. I already weighed in.
Yeah.
Roger.
Yeah. No, I don't. I'm sorry, Peter. Go ahead.
Go ahead, Art.
No, I have the same feeling. I think Smart is the focus groups don't like it anymore. The people who own them.
In fact, wait a minute. Tell us a little bit more about a focus group, because I was reading that you guys studied owners and none of them would recommend it.
Such a small percentage would recommend them to any friend, relative, neighbor, enemy, name it.
That ought to tell you everything you need to know.
Well, that was a year ago.
Yeah,
that came out. And it was quite clear that the biggest problem was that after the cutesies part of it, there's nothing there.
Yeah, and the transmission was the Achilles heel.
Right.
It was just very unsatisfying to drive. But I know for a fact, I know Joe Lajac very well, mm-hmm. and Roger, and they absolutely worked their asses off 24 hours a day trying to resuscitate Smart, make it viable, make it work. And I got to tell you, the marketing quote-unquote brainiacs at Mercedes-Benz don't have a chance in hell of anything with Smart.
I agree totally. You know, if Roger can't do it, and Jill Lajac too, you know, both 100% competent. But my question is, why did the Penske Automotive Group take this car on in the first place? Because anyone who would drive it, it only takes 100 yards to know this is a piece of crap. This isn't going to work because of that transmission and because of the way it rode.
Well, when we look back, this kind of came off the heels of Saturn. They were trying to wrestle Saturn away from GM and make a go of it.
Mm-hmm.
And
so that, it was a bigger plan than just
this
little
Smart car.
Yeah,
it was a bigger plan. And when Roger couldn't get that deal happen, I think he's very much interested in leveraging his
dealer network,
his resources and his network to become a big time distributor. And there's no reason why he can't. But I think the Smart was sort of when the Saturn blew up, they decided they'd make a go at that. And for a while it worked when it was $4 a gallon. But, you know, the Smart never got that great of mileage.
That was one of the disappointments.
Yeah, people would get it and say, oh, it's cute and it must get great mileage. And say, well, no, actually, you can get a Honda or a, you know, this, that, and another thing that gets better mileage than that.
So. You know, the thing that was weird, too, was, just taking on this whole car and using that distribution network, I thought was a great idea. But remember how, as you mentioned, that he tried to get other cars, wanted, in fact, Samsung to build cars in Korea that were going to be sold as Saturns. And it was, he had the rug pulled out from under him. Literally the day before, they were sending out all the press releases. He had contracts with dealers, the whole nine yards.
By Renault,
who is...
The board of directors at Renault.
Yeah.
I mean, literally...
That was another weird deal.
Literally, Carlos Ghosn made a phone call and said the board meeting didn't go well. I was like, huh?
Yeah. But, Art, what do you make of that whole idea of Penske Automotive Group, maybe even potentially AutoNation, with massive amounts of dealerships become big distributors for brands?
Well, I think pretty much if you look at it the other way around for years, whenever an automaker tries to get into the retail business, it doesn't work. There's never been a manufacturer-owned dealership to make a dime. And I have a feeling that if you were as smart as Roger is, and as smart as that organization is, you try to get into the car business, whether it's designing or influencing or putting together some sort of a vehicle. I'm not so sure that, you know, the best distribution system in the world couldn't sell smart. A really lousy distribution system killed off a couple of cars I can think of right off that should have been pretty good. I don't think the two meet. I really don't. I think AutoNation is a good example of how to make money at retail and influence manufacturers into doing certain things. And this is something you see with Southeast Toyota all the time. They influence a lot of the products that Toyota introduces, and in fact have some that are effectively unique to the Southeast. But they don't push the buttons or the levers too hard because they know that's not their business. Their business is retail.
Yeah. Hey, Art, what's your cat's name? He's in the picture.
Where is he?
He's right over your shoulder.
Oh, he's
right
shoulder. He's back there?
Right.
That's Smith.
Oh, cool.
Smith and Wesson, the other one is. Hey, I live in Oregon. You got to have Smith and Wesson.
Yeah. Hey, let's take a quick break right here. We've got plenty more to get back to, but we need to talk about the Chevrolet Cruze, one of our great sponsors of the show. Check it out at Chevrolet.com/Cruze. As I've been saying all along here with the sponsorship, they've got some pretty good standard equipment there. Take your choice of all kinds of things that are on the car besides the standard equipment. You want an automatic 6-speed, manual 6-speed, Pioneer Premium 9-speaker sound system. Gets pretty good fuel economy, especially up against its main competitors, Civic, Corolla, and Focus. And check it out. It's at Chevrolet.com/Cruze. And, of course, that's C-R-U-Z-E.
So, Art, in your studies, is there a growing acceptance of, well, obviously there's a growing acceptance, but how much momentum do the American car companies have with the consumers right now?
Oh, yeah, it's massive. And one of the reasons that it is because Toyota stumbled.
Yeah.
And stumbled badly. And that shook a lot of the fence sitters. Quite a bit. When you see Toyota, I mean, it took down more than just Toyota. It knocked everybody else down a notch.
But not Hyundai.
Except Honda. Honda.
No, Hyundai.
Hyundai, that's totally different. Hyundai's a different, that's a totally different
experience. Okay, don't even count them.
That's a different group.
Well, I think they did hurt Honda, too, because it's like...
Oh, yeah, they hurt Honda a little bit, but they still have a really strong base of people who keep coming back. Toyota, though, took down almost all of the second-tier Japanese brands. Hmm. It not only hurt themselves, but they hurt Nissan. It was just kind of a disaster. So a lot of people started looking at Detroit, and thanks to Ford, they saw some pretty good stuff. Ford really, in consideration lists that we do a lot of, Ford products just have been steadily inching up. Used to be Ford was a high legacy buyer brand. In other words, my dad owned a Ford, my grandfather owned a Ford, my sister owns a Ford, you know, so I'm going to buy a Ford. And what we're starting to see is that the legacy portion of Ford's business is becoming smaller because the other share is getting larger. People are actually starting to consider Fords that actually haven't had a Ford in their history forever or have had Toyotas or Hondas or Mitsubishis or other products. General Motors is starting to look like Ford did a few years ago from that standpoint. Chrysler still has an awful lot of legacy buyers. This Made in Detroit, that ad all by itself raised considerations dramatically for Chrysler. Hmm. Now, whether it lasts long or not is a different issue.
Yeah.
Because that's, again, like you mentioned, it's product. It's product, product, product. It has to be right. The first person who gets into a 200, drives around the block and goes, God, this is awful.
Yeah.
That's it. Right. Forget it. Right. They won't do that again. But actually, the car's pretty decent. So.
Well, it's not bad. It's not bad.
Yeah,
but it's not a great. It's that the car is not nearly as good as the ad was.
Well,
put it that way.
The 300 should have been the ad, but you know what you said about
in Canada.
Yeah. What you said about
assembled.
What you said about Ford is interesting though, because what you're saying about Ford points to an upward trajectory for them for years to come if they stay focused. So that's interesting.
Yeah. Well, the Explorer is a good example of that. I mean, the new Explorer is just, you can't get them.
Yeah.
I don't know about it, how it is in the Detroit area. I know that in virtually most other markets, if a dealer has one on the lot, it's gone before they have a chance to do anything. We have a dealer here who got one and has asked the owner, who bought it within the first 6 hours, if he could come back and let other people drive it so he could use it as kind of a, you know, an owner-owned demo car.
Well, believe
he's not ready to get another one for another couple of months.
Yeah, well, believe it or not, you know, internally there was a huge struggle about that vehicle.
Why so?
Well, because there was a huge faction saying we shouldn't even do it.
Really?
Yeah, oh, yeah. And, you know, then there was the debate about, since it's a unibody now, you know, there was that debate. And, you know, fortunately, Alan Mulally and company, you know, seized the day and realized, you know, despite all the negativity associated with the tire thing and all of that, Explorer is one of the great names in this industry, at least in this country. And now they brought this vehicle out, which is absolutely fantastic. I don't know how many viewers, probably not many, have driven it, but the thing is superb and inside and out. And now, you know, they've got another hit on their hands.
And it's profitable.
Yes, it is.
Yeah, well,
huge numbers.
Yeah.
You know, Mulally recognizes the value of a brand. And, you know, that's the first thing he did when he came back was, you know, what the hell are you guys doing with Taurus? Let's breathe some life into it. And then they did the same thing with Explorer. And Taurus isn't quite selling, I think, where they'd hoped it would be, but the Explorer is doing pretty good right now.
Well, Explorer basically, you know, was basically invented the SUV, or at least it was identified as such.
Right.
And to walk away from that name, they absolutely had to. You know, it's hard. You know, you talk to these companies, and they forget how hard it is to establish a nameplate until they actually try to do it. Then they say, holy shit, this is unbelievable.
So when
you have something like the Explorer, I mean, God, you know, polish it up and pump it up and relaunch it, and, you know, people will be accepting of it, and they definitely are.
Art, what's it cost to put a car name in a buyer's head to consider, you know, it's got to be, what, $100 million to establish a name in the marketplace?
You're looking literally at, and we saw this with the 500 before they renamed it the Taurus, which is what they should have done in the first place. It took 2 years of calling it the 500 before the dealers started calling it the 500 and not the Taurus.
Well, you know,
it was amazing because we had over 60% of the dealers, the salespeople, not the dealers. The dealers, of course, would call it the 500. But the salespeople, when they were talking to customers, kept referring to the 500 as the Taurus because they knew that the customer knew what the Taurus was and had no idea what the 500 was like. But you're looking at literally tens of millions and millions of dollars in order to just basically move one notch. One example, when Nissan went to – I was with the PR agency for Nissan at the time they decided to change it from Datsun to Nissan. And Peter remembers, I'm sure, as you do, John.
Mm-hmm. Well,
it took years before anybody would even remember the name Nissan as being something other than a noodle.
I went to Nissan's ad agency right after they made the change. kind of right in the middle of it, right? It was just unbelievable. Because Datsun was established. We Are Driven was one of the great automotive ad themes. And they just say, you know what, we're Nissan in Japan, we're just going to make the change. Huh?
It took 7 years before the Nissan name recognition got to the point where it was with Datsun at the end. And Datsun was in tight stuff at the time in terms of sales. It was already starting to look like Honda was going to surpass it. And this from a company that at one time would be literally 1,000 units behind Toyota every month. And here we wound up, it took 7 years and all of that money to reestablish a Nissan name, and lost all of that whole 7 years in product identification and people coming in wanting to drive things like a Honeybee. Yeah. The Honeybee lasted longer had a higher recognition than Nissan did.
Well, in my experience, you have to spend probably $250 million a year to register. I mean, just move the needle at all. And I remember the last campaign I worked on at Chevrolet was the launch of the Committee Impala, the 2000 Impala that was really bad. And, at that time, I realized that Toyota was spending like $100 million on the Corolla and, on a Camry launch, at least $100 to $125 million. And I remember when we were first starting the whole Impala launch thing, it was like, oh, well, we're going to spend $65 million. And I was just like, you know what? Something doesn't compute here. And then by the time they launched it, they were going to spend $25 million. And so,
look at all the money they saved.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But it was just like, the discrepancy was just like, are you kidding here? And that was when GM was full-blown in all the divisions, and they didn't have enough money to launch a vehicle. And that's, I started writing that. I remember, Art, you picked it up. I said, what if GM just had one great car in each segment? And instead of all these vehicles, we had a core, and you could spend all this money to launch them properly, because I saw them spending $100 million on a Camry and $25 million on an Impala. You just can't do that. You can't compete. And, so to your question, if Ford put a different name on that Explorer, it would have been a disaster. Mm,
great point.
Disaster. Yeah.
Couldn't do it.
Yeah.
Wrong move. It would have been a terrible move.
Yeah.
Hey, jumping topics here momentarily. Peter, you'll remember last year we had the OPOC engine, the Eco Motors guy, Professor Peter Hofbauer, the guy who designed all the VW diesel and the VR6, blah, 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 blah. Really interesting. And then Don Runkel we had in here, too. And Runkel's another guy that was on there. John Coletti, a guy I'd still like to get on this program, who ran Ford SVT, is also at Eco Motors. Just got an email today. They are having a big press conference next Tuesday. And they're also going to have Dan Ustian, who's the chairman, president, and CEO of Navistar. And they're going to have the president of Navistar Engine Group all having a press conference next Tuesday. To me, this has got to be big news that Navistar is got to be looking at the Eco Motor. I mean, I'm just totally speculating, but why would you have a press conference with all those guys together?
That's right.
I guess we should be there.
So
I'll be there in spirit.
They're kind of cool that, a couple of the guys that we've had on the show here talking about that and other things.
Yeah, I'm excited about that. I mean, there's a lot of doom and gloom. Oh, we got to go electric. We got to do this. I mean, there's innovations galore out there. And this one, I mean, this motor, if I was running the Indianapolis Motor Speedway, I would pay them to build a motor and put it in an Indy car.
What a great idea.
And just say, I don't care if you guys go 20 miles an hour faster. We'll figure that out later. But we need to get that technology on the racetrack, and we need people to see that there's a lot of innovation in this country, and there's a lot of innovation left in internal combustion, no matter what configuration that takes. So, I'm excited about that. So that must be something. That must be Navistar must be saying, hey, we're going to put this thing in a truck or we're going to do something here.
Yeah, I think it could be a pretty significant announcement here.
But I just want to bring that hear up. It because I want to hear maybe it would be like a really great racing engine or something.
I've heard it because I saw it running at Roush's place, which is just down the road here. And I mean, that was one of the things I wanted to know is, it, you know, is this just drawings or, you know, okay. Do you guys actually have something?
Was it sound like a Merlin or what?
Well, it was full throttle, but it was in a test cell, and you know how that is. They've got everything muffled and all that. So I can tell you the engine runs, and this thing was screaming running fast. But I couldn't tell you really what the exhaust note was like because it's just so damn loud in those engine test cells, if you've ever been in. In fact, you really don't even want to be in them.
No.
They're anechoic or semi-anechoic stuff to keep the noise down.
You want to be behind the glass.
Right. Hey, let's take another quick break here because we got some other things to get into. But we've got to thank our sponsor, BridgestoneTire.com. We welcome Bridgestone America's tire operation sponsoring the show. Remember, Bridgestone itself is the largest tire company in the world. They have a full line of premium products from run flats to low rolling resistance to winter and performance touring. You know, like they like to say, it's Bridgestone or nothing, or it's they use in their advertising tagline, passion for excellence. Hey, you were just talking about the Indy 500.
How about the Daytona 500?
Well, Daytona 500, but before we get there, because we got more to talk about, but, you know, the stuff going on in the Middle East, man, it's getting out of hand. In Bahrain, you know, it turned super violent today. And, of course, the Bahraini Formula One Grand Prix is supposed to be just a couple of weeks from now.
They already canceled the GP2 race.
Right, right.
So, you know, it doesn't bode well short of them having an armed camp around them.
But you know what? How, as F1, can you go and pretend that we're just a bunch of rich playboys and we're going to go into this place that's in utter revolution, people wanting to overthrow the king kind of stuff?
Well, this is, you know, this all goes to Bernie Ecclestone's shoulders. He was the one that said, we're going to walk away from the traditional venues, the Silverstones,
right,
blah, 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 and we're going to go where the money is. France, we're going to go where the money is. So we're going to have races in China, India, Moscow, the Middle East, and it'll all be good because, you know, when we go in there and say we need $300 million to put on a race, they'll just say sure. And for the most part, it's worked. But, boy, the downside of this is when you start canceling races, it's not good.
Not good at all. So, anyway, I just had to get that in because
they're going to have to decide real quick here.
Very quick. If I were Formula One, I would say, look, we're not going to be there.
Yeah.
But, you know, they have such disregard for their fans anyway. You know, yeah. Look what they did at the U.S. Grand Prix here a while back where, you know, six cars took to the track. And we don't need to get into that now. That was a disaster.
Yeah.
But Daytona 500 coming up. Peter, you were writing a bit about that on your
show. Well, you know, they repaved the track and they did just the technical exercise to repave it was fascinating. And they spent $20 million. To repave Daytona. I mean, they literally had to dig up everything, every inch of it, the walls, everything, and basically...
Oh, really? Oh, I had no idea.
Oh, yeah, reconstruct. Jeez. And they had these fantastic, these cantilever cranes holding the paving machines on the exact angle. I mean, it was, you know, it was fascinating. But the result is... It's billiard smooth, whereas the old track had, like, ruts and potholes.
Bumps.
And it's just like running on 96 out here. But now they've got ultra-smooth track, and it's changed everything about the traditional drafting process. Now it's not packs of 20 and 25 cars in each lane circulating around in formation. Now the quick way around is two-car drafts. And, you know, it's changed everything. And they ran, I know Kurt Busch won the first qualifier today, and I don't know who won the second.
Oh, yeah, yeah, I should look that up.
But it's changed the complexion of it, and, you know, probably not for the better. I mean, this is another situation where they're going to circulate around in these two-car packs, you know, like five, six two-car drafts.
Right.
And then
for 4 hours.
Yeah, it's just like, okay, well, you watch the start in the first 25 laps, and then go walk your dog or or do whatever you got to do, and then tune in for the last 25 miles, because it's too bad. And NASCAR has not been able to come to grips with what to do on these super speedways. And they've got two ways to go, in my opinion. Number one, they go to much smaller engines and take the restrictors off so that the drivers have throttle control. Right now, they don't have any throttle control. The second way to go, and I favor this, is take the restrictors off the current cars completely, but remove about, 40 rows of seats all the way around the track. Let the guys go out and qualify at 225. Let them race at 210, 215. But the difference with that is, and you'll separate the great drivers from the merely good ones, because when you have to actually get out of the gas to go into a corner because you're going so fast, then you see the real racers, and then you have real racing. You have throttle control. You put throttle control back into the equation. Right now, you're flat out, and you're just, it's kind of like guiding yourself around. It's like a video game. I mean, the consequences are still ugly when something goes wrong.
Yeah.
But, NASCAR has to come to grips with how do we make racing on the super speedway racing again instead of these Keselowski?
No, I'm trying to find it. This isn't good coverage here, but...
Well, it says, it
helps his older brother, but it helped his older brother to fifth place.
Yeah, Brad Keselowski helped his older brother, Brian.
So,
but anyway, yeah, I would do one or the other. Either go to smaller engines and let them, have at it, or pull the restrictors off the current cars. Let them run around there with 900 horsepower and, make sure you'll have to sacrifice pull some stands out. So if anything does go wrong, no fans get caught up in it. But, boy, that would be sensational racing to watch, that's for sure.
What's keeping that from happening?
Well, NASCAR is reluctant to change. They're set in their ways. Brian France's argument, look, we're a 63-year-old sport, and there's bound to be peaks and valleys.
There's a vision.
And so right now it might not be so good, but then they come back, and they're absolutely right. We still are the biggest motorsports thing in the U.S. That's absolutely true. And, I've been critical of NASCAR, but I will not dispute that. However, you have to have vision. You have to get out in front of it. They've been on a downward spiral since 2007. They need massive, immediate change. And NASCAR isn't about massive, immediate change. It's about gradual, incremental changes. The sport needs immediate, big-time changes, and that's just not their MO. So it's difficult.
Yeah, to your point of clearing out the first 20 rows of benches, Lord knows they've got the room to clean it out without losing attendance.
Yeah, they do. But that would be pretty spectacular.
Did you see this Ford Mustang that Ford's proposing for NASCAR?
Well, they've run a front clip on their nationwide cars that's Mustang. And now they're saying, well, we just assume run the Mustang in Sprint Cup.
Right.
But what's happening is, and you can count on this for viewers out there, this is pretty much etched in stone. By 2013 or 14, you will see NASCAR go to stock dimension body and whites from the factory with all the Car of Tomorrow safety stuff put inside it. Because, in other words, they're going back to you can recognize the car going around the track as a Ford, a Chevy, Dodge, Toyota, what have you. The manufacturers have dug their heels in, and NASCAR is responding. So I'd say by 2013 or 14, we will see stock dimension bodywork in NASCAR, and people will be able to say, well, that looks just like that thing I can buy in the showroom tomorrow, or something like that.
I can do that.
It looks like the one sitting in my driveway.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But no, I think NASCAR's learned the hard way that the cookie-cutter template car tomorrow absolutely killed the interest of the traditional fan, the hardcore NASCAR fan. And if you alienate, I don't care what sport it is, if you alienate your hardcore fan, you got problems. Because when all the fad fans decide.
Go away.
Yeah,
there's a new fad.
Become bored in NASCAR. Let's face it. Yeah, I will never forget the cover of Sports Illustrated, NASCAR Nation at the peak, 2006. And I said, you know what? It can only go down from here. And when the fad people jumped off the NASCAR bandwagon, NASCAR realized that, oh, man. And then we alienated our hardcore fans. You know, we don't have the Southern 500 at Darlington on Labor Day. We had it there for 45 years, and we walked away, and we went to Fontana, California instead, and they wondered why the grandstands were only half filled. So, you know, all these things conspire right now. NASCAR's got a litany of problems, but they're of a mindset that they don't make the radical kind of changes needed, and so they're in a pickle, to say the least.
Yeah, they are. Absolutely are.
How do you a quick NASCAR question for you, Peter? In the case of Toyota, was it worth their investment?
Well, you know, Art, and you've done research on this. You know, Toyota was absolutely obsessed about becoming part of the fabric of America. They sold themselves better than Chevy did. You know, Chevy lost their way. No, mm-hmm. No question about it. And Toyota stepped in and became America's car company. They took Chevy's position right out from under them. And they decided that we are going to be an American car company to the point where, you know, I think you probably were sat in research groups where people said, well, I didn't know Toyota was a Japanese car company.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah. And, and so they thought that, well, if we really want the ultimate step to be part of the American fabric, we're going to go in NASCAR. I don't know if it's paid off for them or not. I really don't. Judging by this latest image blow up, probably not, because Toyota's image is so frayed right now. But
I think if you look at Ford or Chevy, they're really in NASCAR to sell pickups. And if that's truly the case, the NASCAR has not worked with Toyota, because the Tundra just doesn't sell all that well.
No, and it's not likely to either. The biggest, largest, most important segment in the pickup market is that work-related contractor group, journeyman kind of group, and that's really where the heart and soul of the pickup truck market is. Farmer, rancher, that's one segment. Contractors, another one, and between those two, you're looking at over 50% of pickup sales, over 60% actually. And the thing that's interesting is that Toyota has tried and failed miserably to break into those two groups. They make forays every once in a while, and they do fairly well for a short period of time. The biggest problem is right down back at the dealer level. Ford dealers know that when a work truck comes in, it has to be turned around quickly for service so the guy gets back to work. Toyota dealers, the first thing they do is ask, well, we can make an appointment for next week.
Yeah.
And somebody who owns a work truck doesn't want to wait till next week. He needs it done now.
Yeah.
Ford dealers in those areas deal with things very quickly. Toyota dealers are just still consumer-oriented retail sellers, and that's really hurt the Tundra a lot.
That's very insightful. That's a great point. Well, you know, the other thing about, you know, when the ultra green hordes in this country, you know, they want us all to be driving, you know, electric powered clown cars overnight. But, you know, I always, when I get in discussions with them, I always say, how do you think the people who do work at your house are going to get to your house? How are they going to bring the materials to do what work is needed to be done? How is the stuff you ordered online the other night going to get to your house? Do you think it's all going to be magic electric clown cars? No. We need pickup trucks, and we need vans. And we're going to need them for a long time to come. Yeah, they might have hybrid assist, but, you know, pronouncement that, oh, well, we won't have any of those vehicles in the future society. Well, that's a wrong way to go.
We have a very similar kind of, there's a similar kind of attitude. This is all woods up here.
Right.
And
great golf course.
Oh, yeah. And a couple of, some of the great golf courses.
Yeah.
Yeah. But we frequently get people who say, you really shouldn't cut down those trees. And you ask them the same kind of question, well, what are you going to use for lumber to build your house? And the response is something like, well, they go to the lumber store. Okay.
Hey, let's take another quick break here and come back and do rapid fire. But I want to take a moment to thank our sponsor, Dow Automotive, but especially DowAerify.com. It's a breakthrough diesel particulate filter, low back pressure. You can upsize it, downsize it. You just cut it to just about fit any kind of engine. So you meet compliance of diesel particulate regulations at a lot lower cost. Check it out at DowAerify.com, and that Aerify is AERIFY. Well, let's get to rapid fire. I know we've got a number of questions here, and Ben, did you want to run that music? Okay, Jeff W., we'll throw this right to you, Art. After seeing January sales numbers, will any Lincoln dealers be able to hang on until the new product arrives?
Yes.
He's got this rapid fire down.
Yeah, no, I think the big dealers, and, you know, it's interesting because they haven't really been shown anything yet. Big dealers will be there, and I think if they're patient, they will be rewarded.
But they got hammered.
Yeah, there are a lot of Lincoln dealers who are also Ford dealers, and they can live off of the fat of the Ford dealership for a couple of years anyway.
Yeah, but Lincoln sales were down substantially last month, over year.
And that's all right. There's still enough synergy from the Ford side of the business for a lot of those dealers because they're not Lincoln dealers only.
Yeah.
They weren't Lincoln Mercury dealers only for the most part. They also had a Ford franchise somewhere, whether it was on the same lot or next door or across the street.
Okay, next question. Steve says, I was wondering if anyone on the panel has driven the Sonic, because with a manual, after I sat in the car, I was lucky to get my foot from being entrapped between the brake and the tunnel.
No, I haven't driven the.
I haven't driven it. I don't think any of it.
We haven't had the product rollout yet.
Neil says, I've been meaning to tell you, I'm glad you have sponsors and breaks periodically so I can drink beer instead of sipping scotch during your show. Mike Dwight says, my suggestion for NASCAR, give them all real cars off dealer lots. Which is to your point of the body in white that they're going to have to
work on.
Body
in white, and you put all the safety stuff inside.
Yeah.
I still love Daytona where they used to have the convertibles and all you saw was this chintzy roll bar.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, here's a comment from Dragonfire, a question. He says, will Ford stop making the Flex? I don't think so. And, you know, it doesn't sell all that well. I don't even think they sell 4,000 a month. I want to say like 3,700 a month or something.
The people
like
who buy them are intensely loyal about them and talk them up.
Right.
So I don't know what Ford's going to do. But, you know, it's interesting they're going to put the MKT in the livery service, which I think is genius.
I think it's a good idea.
Yes.
I agree.
Because, you know, it affords all the luggage room you need. And they're even going to call it the MKT Town Car.
Town Car, right.
So that was a little aside that happened this week that sort of flew under the radar. But I actually,
we had it in Autoline Daily.
Yeah, you did. But I think actually Ford's going to do real well with that.
No, I totally agree because that's a pretty roomy vehicle to begin with. I think it was probably roomier than the Town Car actually was.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
What do you think,
Art? Back real quick to the question of the thing that Peter had mentioned. The Flex owners are incredibly loyal. And they just love that vehicle. And it takes time for that to really spread, but I think it will eventually.
Next question, we stick right with Lincoln from Dynaride. About names, Dynaride says, when will Lincoln bring back its well-known product names, the names known by millions of people? And I agree, I don't like the MKT, MKZ, MKS, MK anything.
Yeah, you know, I don't know what's going to happen there. I think Continental is one of the great American car names, and to not see that on a Lincoln is just a travesty. But then again, I don't want it to be like Oldsmobile did with the Cutlass,
right,
where everything was a Cutlass,
right.
Calais, Cutlass whatever.
Supreme. Or,
Cutlass right. Supreme, yeah, you can't do it.
Cutlass Sedan.
Continental. But,
I think that the use of the Town Car name is concession to that feeling.
Yeah. So I don't know what they're going to do, but I would love to see the Continental back and the Mark.
Oh, God, yes. I mean, you know, and again, it goes back to what we said earlier. They've got the heritage to pull it off.
Of course, you know, I would like to see the Cadillac Eldorado and the,
you bet.
And the Cadillac Coupe de Ville. I mean, whatever. So.
Dale from Lakewood, Ohio has a question for Peter. Do you think Lieutenant Dan is finally admitting he really can't run GM by asking Bob Lutz to come back as a consultant?
No, I don't think so. I think Lieutenant Dan made some key errors early on. I understand he's a quick study, but when you make pronouncements as the CEO of GM about product, you better be damn sure of what you're talking about. And I think Lieutenant Dan got ahead of himself. I think if Bob comes back, it's probably the product people saying to Dan, it wouldn't hurt.
Yeah.
And I think Dan has quickly realized that I really need some time on this product stuff.
Yeah.
So I don't think you're going to see these pronouncements from Ackerson about, oh, we're going to sell 250,000 volts or any of that for a while. I think he has learned the hard way that that's not the way to go.
Okay, Greg Bolio, I hope I said that right, has a question for you, Art. How do you do focus groups and other face-to-face auto-related things based out of brand, out of Bandon? And how much are you on the road? And, I'll follow up with some of those others. Let's get to those.
All right. Well, first of all, we have groups that typically are in Los Angeles, Chicago, New York, Florida. All we do here in Bandon is sit around with umbrellas for the most part. we let people that have that kind of, that are on staff, they do it, and they do it within those cities.
Okay.
So that's how we run it.
He also wants to know if the golf resort has affected life in Bandon for better or worse.
Much better.
Really?
Much better.
A lot more spending locally and stuff?
Yeah, a lot more spending locally, and they have now become the largest employer in the county.
Wow.
Which it used to be public service. Now it's actually a private enterprise that has more employees, and they pay well, and they're just spectacular.
Now, are there two courses or three courses now?
There are four.
Oh.
Yeah, and all of them have been rated in the top 10 in the country.
Wow. Okay, a comment from George. He says, the Buick Regal has been getting a lot of mediocre reviews lately. Test drove one myself, and I agree, he says. My question is, did GM screw this European car of the year when certifying it for the U.S., or are the standards between the U.S. and Europe that different? He says, unless they substantially improve the power in the Regal, this car will be a miss. There is differences, of course, between Europe and U.S. spec cars, primarily being tires. You know, we equip everything with all-season radials. They don't do that in Europe. You know, in fact, I was talking to Jim O'Donnell from BMW, who told me when you sell a BMW in Germany, by law, you have to sell a set of snow tires that go along with that car.
A winter set of wheels and tires.
Yeah. So I wasn't aware of that. So, yeah, here we compromise with that. And so you don't get that real quick turn in cars that you might expect if you've driven them in Europe. You don't have quite the bite or cornering speed because all-season radials are a compromise. And for a lot of purposes, they're a good compromise, but they just don't handle as well as the kind of summer tires you get in Europe. So that's a key difference right there.
But the Regal, you know, I don't know what to say about it. I mean, it needs more tuning, more development. The Regal Turbo is, you know, promising, but, you know, they got a ways to go.
Also, too, remember, in Europe, you can get turbo diesel in the car, which is not available here at all. So there's a number of significant differences there. Rumblestrip's got a question for you, Art. Is your impression that when people say they want an electric/hybrid/high-mileage car, they say that because they think it's what they're supposed to say, but when it comes to putting their cash down, they don't pay the $5,000 premiums?
Yeah, the premium that people are willing to pay for a hybrid right now is somewhere around $800. That's it. That's
wow.
That's the most that they're willing to pay for it. They are pocketbook oriented. I don't care what it is. If there isn't some sort of an incentive on it, They won't buy it. They'll just go for whatever the non-hybrid version is. Diesel has a higher. People are more willing to spend money on the alternative if it were a diesel than gas, even though the fuel cost is higher, which I find interesting also. But the hybrid bubble, you know, it may not have burst, but it certainly is nothing like it was a few years ago when Prius was selling everything at a premium.
Joseph has an interesting point here. He says, Jason Vines always said the Chrysler Corp recalls hurt the Chrysler brand cars more than the Dodge or Jeep ones. And he asks, is there any evidence that Toyota's woes are hurting Scion and Lexus?
Scion for sure, Lexus a little bit, but not very much. We've seen some carryover in consideration numbers because of the Toyota problems. People who are Lexus intenders saying, well, you know, if their problems are with Toyota, they may not be with Lexus, but you know what? I think I'll look at a Mercedes as well.
Yeah. You know, I think if I remember right, going by memory, never a good thing to do, but I thought that both Mercedes and BMW were ahead of Lexus in last month's sales. I think it has had an impact on them because, remember, the big runaway Toyota problem started with a Lexus out in California where, unfortunately, that highway patrol guy was killed with some members of his family. That's what triggered the whole thing. So I think Lexus has been hurt, maybe not to the degree that Toyota was, though.
Well, certainly the consideration numbers are down.
Jay Cujo wants to know, when will the product floodgates finally open for GM? They really underwhelmed on new product this auto show season.
Well, they've got a bunch of stuff coming in end of 11, 12, 13, 14.
There's no question the bankruptcy, and actually the 2 years leading up to the bankruptcy, things slowed down big time.
Yeah, I mean, Dan Akerson said they cost him a year, and I said cost him at least two.
At least,
probably two to three.
Glenn E. wants to know, is a diesel coming to the Ram half ton? I don't know.
Who knows?
You know,
no idea.
Diesels are a real premium. You know, I think it's going to stay in the bigger trucks for some time.
Yeah.
Let's see, what else? Let's see. Here's one last one, and we'll probably get to wrapping it up then. But, oh, wait a minute. Whoa, we've got some phone calls there. I hadn't even seen them coming in. Ben, let's bring in a phone call.
Hey, John, this is Nathan Keeley from Zanesville, Ohio. And after hearing your news about how biodiesel and hydrogen fuel cell programs funding is being cut, should Cascada and, frankly, makers of algae biofuels be worried that their funding is going to be cut next? And if so, is it going to be cut? And just on a side note, I've been reading David Bloom's book, Alcohol Could Be a Gas, and I couldn't think of any other person that would be better to talk about, you know, biofuel and ethanol. So I think he'd be a great candidate for your after-hours show or even Auto Line Detroit. So.
Yeah, that's a good suggestion. David Bloom's written some pretty interesting thing about biofuels. And that's something that we didn't have time to get into earlier.
Remember, it was proposed by the Obama administration, focusing on electric and eliminating the clean diesel programs.
Right. Well, it'll get eliminated, I'm pretty sure. Yeah, the Obama administration has proposed eliminating all the subsidies that it is spending on clean diesel stuff and on hydrogen fuel cars, i.e. fuel cells, so that they can pour everything into electrics. So, you know, obviously the administration has decided that we all should drive electrics, and that's what it's going to be. As we talked about earlier, I think that's unlikely to happen. But when it comes to affecting biofuels, people have got to understand what the subsidy really is. There is a roughly 50-cent per gallon subsidy that goes to the blenders. Doesn't go to the farmers, doesn't go to the guys who actually make ethanol. It goes to the blenders who blend the ethanol with gasoline, which by and large are owned by the large oil companies. So the subsidies actually by and large go into oil companies, not the farmers or the guys who make the ethanol in the first place. So, and that was to try to convince them that they should start blending ethanol, because even if people don't like ethanol, it's the only what they call oxygenate, and I think I said that right, that the EPA has approved to clean up gasoline, because putting ethanol in gasoline actually does lower emissions. So will it affect biofuels, what Obama's talking about? That's up to Congress to decide, because remember, there is a mandate from Congress on the EPA to have, and I can't remember the exact numbers, but it's something like 32 billion gallons of biofuels by 2022 or something like that. So, you know, on one hand, Congress is mandating this is what thou shalt do. And on the other hand, they could easily pull all the subsidy stuff on ethanol. But remember, pulling the subsidy is going to affect the blenders, nobody else. Anyway, Ben, we got another call there.
Hey, John McElroy, this is Jonathan.
All right, Jonathan.
Van, New Jersey, you have the best show, always the best guest. Listen, I have a quick question. What would it do if General Motors put an e-assist, a 65-pound system with 15 horsepower, 79 extra pound-feet of torque, in, let's say, a Camaro SS? What do you estimate its highway gas mileage would be? I know it's a nutty question, but I'm intrigued by this e-assist system of only 65 pounds and providing 37 miles per gallon for a Buick LaCrosse equipped with it in a four-cylinder. I was just curious, what would happen if it was attached to a vehicle with a V8, like the Camaro SS?
Well, you know what, I think where our mileage standards are going, you're going to see that in our performance cars, just so that they're safely, you know, you can't just hope it compensates with a bunch of small cars. I think our luxury and performance cars are going to have some sort of e-assist.
Absolutely. I totally agree. You know, especially when you look post-2016, I'd say some sort of assist is going to be very common. Stop, start for sure. And then it's going to be, you know, stop. And when you get the start, you get a little bit more oomph to go with it, too. Not just start the engine, but help launch the car a little bit. So, yeah, and Camaro, yeah, I could see that happening in a base Camaro.
Well, I think first of all, the next generation, the major redo of Camaro, they're going to take a bunch of weight out of the car. They have to.
They have to,
they
right.
know it. They
it's
know
a heavy car.
It's a heavy car.
Hundreds of pounds more than a Mustang.
Yeah.
So that tells you that there's hundreds of pounds that can come out of that car.
Come out of it, yeah.
You know, the other thing, too, though, is when you get into high performance, you know, I think what Jonathan was getting at, too, is you can have awfully high performance with electric. Remember, we had Bob Purcell from Protean here, and he was talking about bolting on a couple of electric motors on each of the rear wheels of a Camaro and adding 200 horsepower net per wheel, if I remember right. So you can do some awesome things. The trade-off, at least right now, is in unsprung weight. It's going to handle like crap. But if you want straight-line acceleration, get out of the way. Unless,
there are
course,
some. I'm sorry.
Yeah, no, go ahead.
No, there are some fascinating, because I wind up keeping pretty much up on the electric motor business. And there are some fascinating things that people are doing to get the weight out of them and to generate more power that are not in the auto industry, that are outside the auto industry for other uses, that are perfectly applicable to exactly what you're talking about, where you're adding maybe a couple of pounds at the most of unsprung weight that could literally generate 100, 150 horsepower.
And, you know, I think ultimately there's a chance to reduce weight if you get light enough electric motors, and you can incorporate the brakes into it. Because brakes are pretty heavy, you know, the rotors and calipers and all that. And as you guys know, with regen braking, you don't need as quite the brake power that you might otherwise with, you know, just having to absorb it all with friction material. So I think in the future, I could foresee where you would actually go to electric in hub motors because it would be a lighter solution.
Well, you know, we've seen Porsche's on the leading edge of this stuff, so that's where they're heading. I mean, Porsche's going to have an electric-assisted Porsches, and they're going to be fast. And
well, I still love what they're doing with the flywheel.
Yeah, yeah.
It's
cool.
That is so good.
Cool.
Okay, we got one more phoner here, Ben. Let's bring it in.
Hey, guys. It's Frank from Bridgeton, New Jersey. It's interesting you talked about the trouble in the Middle East affecting the Bahrain Grand Prix. I think, actually, the trouble in the Middle East may, in some ways, be a good thing for Ford. They've got all these small cars coming out, and as we know, it all comes down to gas prices. And, you know, this doesn't look like something that's going to blow over anytime soon. And I don't know if you've been keeping an eye on oil prices, but looks like gas prices are going to be even higher than anticipated. What do you think that's going to do for Ford and their heavy commitment on small cars? Thanks, guys, and keep up the good work.
Well, it's not just Ford. You know, it's GM. And let's face it, I mean, the new mainstream American car is the C-Class car. The new Focus coming, the Cruze. I mean, Americans don't know it yet, but that's our new mainstream car. Yes, it's partially because of the emission standards or mileage standards coming, but you talk to any manufacturer and all their studies and art, I'm sure you can agree, they're counting on $4 a gallon. And when it goes to $4 a gallon, it's going to stay at $4 a gallon at least. So everyone should be prepared. And boy, the tinderbox in the Middle East right now, that, you know, anything could happen.
Anything could happen, but I'll take a slightly contrarian view. I don't understand why gas prices are going up. And I say it for this reason. Our reserves, our reservoirs of refined and crude are brimming.
Well, John, they're going up because the Super Bowl cost so much money in Texas, and they got to recoup that in a hurry.
Oh, why didn't I think of that?
Hey, Art, before we go or anything, Tell us about Hyundai. Tell us what your studies are seeing. I mean, the rapid, explosive acceptance of this brand and their momentum has to be showing up in what you do.
Yeah, it does. One of the things that we see is that it's not your father's Camry.
Hmm.
There is a sizable percentage of Hyundai buyers who do not want to be associated with their parents' car. And they grew up on Toyotas. And they have had good luck with and feel that the... it's interesting. They don't necessarily believe that the quality is as good, even though they think it's good. But they see the pricing and the value for the dollar being significantly better than in many cases, well, among the Hyundai people, than Toyota or virtually anybody else. And Hyundai has done a nice job on the marketing side. They've done some nice stuff with the product. Nothing necessarily is cutting edge, but it's filling that American car gap that you talked about Toyota wanting to fill forever, which I recognize. And Hyundai has been from day one targeting Toyota as its primary target, focus, everything, and wanted to be like Toyota, and has done just a masterful job of doing that. And dealers love it. Dealers talk them up. Customer comes in or just be walking in, never saw one before, is bound to get a laundry list of enthusiastic pointers on the sales floor. And the conversion rate for Hyundai is astronomical compared to anybody else.
Really?
Yeah. And so if you can get people to come in, let me give you an example, real quick example. We always do a thing that's called deterioration. How many people do you have to get to consider your product to get to 1,000 sales? Okay. In Mercedes' case, it's 1,100. 1,100 people consider, 1,000 will buy. In Suzuki's case, it's 940,000. Okay.
Yeah.
It's. I mean, I'm serious. This is a part of the problem. In Hyundai's case, we have seen it go literally from 350,000, 400,000 numbers 5 years ago down into about 100,000, which is superior to virtually any of the other mass market manufacturers, including Toyota. So Hyundai's problem is really on the product side, and they're filling in those gaps. They needed to get older, more wealthy consumers, or at least higher income consumers, into their showrooms in order to expand their market or expand their volume. And they've succeeded in doing that with some of the products they've brought out. And it just works for them. They're just clicking. And I don't see where they're going to falter unless they have some kind of major recall disaster like Toyota did. And I don't see that happening. Their products aren't necessarily super high tech. They're just extremely good, they're at the high end of being good.
Yeah, it's the total package.
Yeah, new Elantra.
Absolutely.
Scary.
Yeah, I haven't been in the Elantra yet.
But I mean, it's just
I get that next week.
The whole package is scary.
Yeah, no, I mean, what they offer as standard equipment at the price that they do is really impressive.
But, you know, I tend to think, you know, Hyundai, they will make a mistake. We just don't know what it'll be yet, whether it'll be a
recall. Yeah, no, I agree.
It may have already happened. Yeah. You know, it may have already happened, and it's just for them to catch up to. You know, I still wonder. They have a history, at least in the U.S., of burning through management. And, you know, we've seen some big-time defections or people leave the company in design and marketing. You know, Joel Piskowski, Joel Iwanek. I guess you better not be named Joel. But in any case, to me, that's the one Achilles heel to watch on is, you know, the management team that they've had in place, especially with Kravchuk, I think has done a masterful job. But can they do that? Or are the Koreans going to start dictating what has to be done? And we've seen that happen in the past. So that's my only question. But on the product side, and I would say from a design, engineering, manufacturing standpoint, they've been brilliant, really impressive.
I agree.
Cool.
Well, and obviously consumers agree.
Yep. Well, this is probably a good time to wrap it all up. But, Art, it's been great having you here.
Art, it's great seeing you.
Oh, don't sign off yet because we're not about to. We want to ask everybody to check out Roundabout. You can see that in the John's Journal section of our website. In fact, you can watch them record live on Fridays at 6:30 p.m. Eastern Time, or you can get the podcast at the iTunes Store. It's called Roundabout. You can follow us with all our programs on Facebook, facebook.com/OutOfLineDetroit. On Twitter, twitter.com/OutOfLine. Get Peter's stuff at autoextremist.com or on Twitter at twitter.com/autoextremist. Also, check out his book, Witch Hunt.
Yeah, witchhuntbook.com. It's coming out on March 15th. And people asking me about buying Auto Extremist wearables, go to the Line column.
The Line.
The Line on our website. And at the bottom of it, there's a little black square that says AE Store. And there's still some stuff in there, and then we're going to make some new stuff this spring.
And Art, if people want to find out about how they can hire your company and pay you big gobs of money to figure out what's going on, where do they go?
They just go directly to our website, which is CNWMR.com, which is our letters, Coastal Northwest Marketing Research.
Cool. That's great.
And
one other thing.
That's the first time I've ever heard what those initials stood for.
Oh, you know,
that's
I never
our
did
number
that.
One question. I swear to God.
Damn.
Nobody asks who J.D. Power would that stand for.
Coastal.
Well, we could ask what the hell does CNW stand for.
Coastal Northwest Marketing Research?
Yep.
Wow.
I never knew that.
I did not know that.
I did not know that. Hey, one other thing, too. You know, we do this other program here called Open Line on Monday nights. We're looking at doing the 24 hours of Open Line, and we want to get moderators from all around the world for the different time zones. If you're interested, we want to hear from you. Just send us an email at viewermail@outoflinedetroit.tv. But anyway, that brings this show to a close. Thanks.
Good night, Simon.
Wherever you are.
Wherever you are.
Visit our website, outoflinedetroit.tv, where you can watch us live Thursday nights at 7 p.m. Eastern, Get your daily automotive news fix with AutoLine Daily and in-depth analysis and interviews with AutoLine Detroit. That's all there and much more at AutoLineDetroit.tv.
AutoLine After Hours is brought to you by Bridgestone, passion for excellence. Chevrolet, the all-new Chevrolet Cruze. Get used to more. And by Dow Automotive Systems, innovations for clean powertrain solutions.
Yeah, this Skype thing's working. Skype's thing's working a lot better.
Well, remember, last time we had you on a laptop, and there was a lag, and so, I don't know. But having you up on the screen here, and we'll get better at this, too. We can make this look even better than what it is here in the studio. But this works great. It's almost like we're together here.
Yeah,
I know. I love this. My problem is I've got an office that's glass on three walls and the roof. And the sun happens to set right through that one window.
God, you must have to have your windows clean often with that climate there.
Yeah, that's the reason that I'm married. Oh, I'm going to hear about that.